up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We are live on Crowdcast. We're live on YouTube. We are unlive over on iTunes, Android, Spotify,
dead.
Stitcher.
We're dead on the
We're
podcast.
We're dead, baby. But if you're listening on the audio podcast, thanks for tuning in regardless. You're just not going to get to ask questions live. That's the only difference. Otherwise,
join
you're still...
us. If we can't make a harder sell to meet us here on a Tuesday night, I don't know what else we can say. You know?
Now, speaking of things that couldn't come out on a Tuesday night, let's talk about our other co-host, Pete.
The third.
Pete the third. Now, Pete, I only bring this up. I only mention this. Normally, we keep our personal lives out of things, right?
100%. Now, yes. Except for Pete, who we are constantly asking about his personal life. But that's his mistake for telling us.
Yes. Now, this came up on the last show. His girlfriend's mom is in town, and his girlfriend on the show, in the comment section over here on Crowdcast, said, hey, should I bring my mom to watch the show? Specifically, should they be sitting in the other room watching the show while Pete was recording
yes.
it?
Natural yes.
Yes.
Easy
Pete,
yes.
Pete was like mumbled a little bit and backed away and didn't want to address it at all and really just wanted to move on to the next topic. But his girlfriend was super into it. Everybody listening was super into it. And I honestly thought I was excited because it was a chance to really bump things up with Pete and talk about how great he was.
100%. We would be wing was. Past was.
We'd well, be I say was before him. He ditched out of the show.
Yes. He's doing the gentlemanly thing here. I'm on vacation now, but I wanted to be here. I'm on vacation with Luana's mom, actually. So it's actually...
sure. That's weird. Luana's mom is actually here in Brooklyn with me.
Oh, it's crazy. It's crazy what's... Luana has a lot of moms. Yeah. No doubt about that. But yes,
she
Pete's doing the gentlemanly thing. Yes. Many moms. Takes a whole
Make
village of moms.
Work, I always
yeah.
say.
Exactly. Someone come get my moms. But yeah, my children are here in the other room. They may come screaming in here, so we may have some surprise guests at any point in this.
Are you in some sort of a closet right now? What's going on?
No, I'm in a beach shack on the island of Nantucket.
I just saw one. Sneaking
not
in.
A good sign already. They're here now. Bluey is on in the other room, and it's not hitting like usual.
Oh man, just bad lessons for Bluey this episode, I guess.
Yeah, I know. That sure. Great. She's says she wants to join the podcast. She's the sort of has a Pete energy, so it's
okay.
Perfect.
Okay, just a little anarchic.
Yes.
If her mom shows up, she won't do the show anymore.
100%. Yeah. I mean, it's true. If her mom were here, she would not be on this show.
Right. Well, I am very excited about this show, regardless of Pete being here or not. And Luana's mom, if you listen to this later, Pete's a great guy, and he's really good for your daughter.
Yes, 100%. This is going to be great.
Yeah, this is going to be cool. That's what I just heard.
Yeah, she's like, where's the pool? I'm like, that's not.
Oh, where's the pool? Not this is going to be cool.
She's like, this is going to be cool. Yeah, she's been wanting to make her big break for quite some time.
Great. Well, why don't we bring in our first guest who is not actually your daughter sneaking in. It is actually John Luzar. He is the writer of Marguerite versus the Occupation, which is on Kickstarter now. John, hello. Welcome
hello.
To the show.
Hello. Hello, all mothers and children and hosts and cats and dogs.
It's a family affair here at Comic Book Club.
Fantastic.
Looks like you have a sweet collection of comic books going on in the background before we get in and talk about yours.
Oh, these are DVDs. But
really?
Yeah. The comic book room is we'll do the next one in the comic book room.
All right. And I think everything is comic books until proven otherwise. So.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yes, nothing weird great. About that.
So let's talk about Marguerite versus the Occupation. As usual for Comic Book Club, you already have a successful Kickstarter. This happens to us pretty regularly that things get pre-funded before they even come on, which we call like the retroactive Comic Book Club bump.
Yes.
Even without knowing you're coming on here, we did this for you. But let's talk about the project. It's very fun, semi-historically based or definitely historically based. I mean, I guess that's the first question is like, how accurate is it to history or not?
I just did thousands and thousands of hours of research. No, it's historical fiction. As far as I know, nothing this specifically happened. But
what if someone comes forward and says, "That was me. This is me. I was part of the French Revolution."
They're a filthy liar, and I'm definitely not after their intellectual property. I promise.
Well, so talk about the idea then. I mean, I think you can kind of figure it out from the title, and I read the first issue. It's big action, a lot of fun, pretty intense. But where was the initial germ of the idea? Where did this come from?
Gosh, I mean, the initial germ was I'm brand new and I'm just starting out, and I just needed to figure out how to write action scenes because I hadn't done them in my first couple of comics. So there was an exercise element of it, and it evolved. It was initially this whole science fiction thing set on an alien world, like a junk trader's wife trying to get her husband to stop selling resources to an occupying army. But I was watching The Third Man about last December, and just the kind of that bombed out mid-20th century, like, what has civilization done to itself sort of setting, just it kind of hit home, and it resonated with how I was feeling about stuff right then, and it gave me an opportunity to mess up some Nazis, which was very, very appealing for the mood I was in.
That's so funny, just because I feel like comics often go the other way. They say, what if it was World War II, but on an alien planet, and instead you went in the other direction?
Well, you're like, World War II is pretty fucked up just as it was. Why don't we just get into that a little bit?
Yeah. It's like not a fan of how that whole thing went down, except for the ending. That worked out pretty well.
Yeah, that's all right. I mean, there's been some repercussions over time, but we don't need to get into that. We talk about that every week here on the podcast. So, Marguerite, though, as a character, what was the inspiration behind her?
It was, again, I don't know how political I want to get here, but this really came together during... Excellent. It came together during the transition, and there was just this sense of, you're beaten, you lost, now get the fuck out of the house. and that's what Marguerite is about. She, you know, she comes home, she wants to be there at the end of the war and see her beloved childhood home as it's liberated. And there are Nazis in her house. They've set up a machine gun nest because her house is at the top of the hill. So strategic high point. So it was just that image and that idea is the core of it. It just struck me as so invasive and personal. And that's just how I was feeling about stuff at that time and place, feeling very like Marguerite.
So you had a big emotional reaction to what was going on in the world, and so you dove into researching it. How did that emotional, as you're researching, does the emotion sort of like fade off a little bit, or were you getting angry through the lens of history as well?
A little bit. The anger is kind of there throughout. We did, is interesting. We did this script Marvel style instead of full panel breakdowns. So in the writing, the script pass was actually the last work that got done after everybody else's work was done. And I just slipped right back into it. Got all mad all over again. Like, oh, you little bastards. Yeah.
Always write angry.
Yes. Given this was an exercise for you in terms of writing action scenes, what did you learn over the course of the experience?
Oh, gosh, I learned so much on this. And I was very lucky to have Casey Cavedo. He's such a fantastic, clear storyteller. I think on this one, I just finally learned, or I hope I learned, we'll see what happens going forth, to let the pictures tell the story and not, you know, try to have a chokehold on everything with captions and dialogue, which is I used to be in theater before I started doing comics, so that's always my first instinct, and in comics it's a pretty bad one, I think. so like Yeah, that's the big lesson. Just letting the comic book be a comic book instead of trying to make it something else.
Now, what made you choose to do the Marvel style? Because I do think that that had to play into what you're talking about right now.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it was partially in pursuit of that goal. Also, it seems like 2 years ago, but I took a workshop with J.M. DeMatteis, and great writer, but it seems so simple, but there was an exercise he gave that he just gave us a page of art from a Spider-Man comic he'd written and told us to dialogue it, and we didn't know the context that he wrote, but it really opened my eyes to, and this all seems so basic now, but like the pictures that you have are the pictures that you have, and you have to write. I mean, like, honestly, if you can see what I did on my first couple of books, it's really trying to like, no, I want to write what I want to write, and it doesn't work. So maybe this is a really like a 101 lesson for me, but I had to learn it, and I had to learn it the hard way, apparently. And I'm grateful I did.
I feel like that's a lesson, though, that you need some experience or some confidence to be able to just sort of let go of the steering wheel a little bit, you know, take one hand off at least so that you can really do it. I can't imagine coming into comics being like, all right, let's ride. Give me some pictures.
Yeah. No, that letting go, that's actually exactly what it feels like. And again, when you've got such skilled, proficient partners, it's a lot easier. So I've been lucky all around on this one.
Well, what about Kickstarter? What has that experience been like for you?
Ooh, boy.
Got to keep both hands on the wheel for Kickstarter.
Do the Kickstarter Marvel style as well?
No. The Kickstarter is a very colicky baby that needs a lot of attention. Yeah. It's tough because, like, you know, I'm trying to break in and trying to learn how to write, and then you've got all of these promotional tasks on top of it, and you got to write advertising copy. My partner, my editor, Jason Fleece, is a big help with that. He's a great project manager, and he does all the graphic design, and I think he does a wonderful job, which is great because I'd have absolutely no sense for that. So I'm very lucky in all of my partners on this book. It's a really, really, for somebody just starting out, I got a real lucky break with this crew.
Well, and I mean, not a lucky break, but like, I guess a skillful break. Like we were saying earlier, you've done really well with this Kickstarter and it's already funded. So given that you have blown past your first goal, what's next? What are you looking to add on potentially with this, I put this in quotes, but extra money that you have rolling around right now?
Oh, it's tons of it. I'm wealthy,
you're rich.
Man. Well, you got it up on the screen there. I'm hoping to give the art team's work the presentation they deserve. I'm wearing this publisher hat. It's so new to me, and I've been a comics fan since I was in seventh grade, and I never paid a ton of attention to the cover or the paper stock or the paper finish. I've been reading a lot of Boom Studios books lately.
Nah.
And I love the way the paper feels in my hands, and that thick cover, it just feels like a prestige movie, you know, Oscar season. Yeah. And if we can hit these stretch goals, I'd like to do it for our book. So, you know, we got our link there in the chat.
Awesome. If That's people awesome. Do want to pledge, how much time do they have? It started July 20th, so I assume August 20th-ish is when it wraps up.
I think it's August 19th. We're right about halfway through right now. So about a couple of weeks.
All right. Well, very cool. John, thank you so much for coming on. Love the project. The book's a lot of fun. People should definitely go pledge it. And good luck with the rest of the run, though. Doesn't seem like you need it.
Get that metallic ink.
That's right.
We see all of our guests.
That's right.
Plus up that cardstock, kid.
Hey, thanks so much for having a newbie on your show. I appreciate the heck out of it.
Absolutely. And enjoy that DVD collection. Yes. Okay. All right. Just
what's your before you go? What's the prize DVD in that big back wall back there?
Oh gosh. They're DVDs. Are there prized ones?
Wait, you were just looking around. Like, are they all around you right now?
Maybe.
Oh my god! Wow.
I have a problem. We're comic book fans. We're collectors, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah,
yeah.
Once you start, you can't stop.
Yeah, a lot of stuff of the has moved online. Just if you haven't, heard.
I'm a dinosaur. I move all the time. So believe me, I know exactly what I've got myself into.
I do think you are right, because eventually we're not going to have access to the streaming stuff that we think we're going to rely on for the rest of our lives, and you're going to be the king of content.
Oh, that's right.
I only watch things on Disney Plus Premier Access. That's the only way I prefer to watch movies nowadays. Oh,
cool. I like it. That's efficient.
Thank you. John, thanks again. Have a great night. Good luck with the project.
All righty. Thank you so much, guys.
Good night.
All right. Once again, that is John Lazar, and the book is called Marguerite versus the Occupation. You can check it out right now on Kickstarter, and the action is, in fact, super fun in it, so you should definitely check it out.
It's very cool. Before you jump over there, I just want to say, J.M. DeMatteis, I was going through these couple boxes I found at my mom's house a couple weeks ago. I found the Spectre run that he did, and I was rereading that, and it's just so good, and that's just something that, like, I don't know, when are you ever going to pick that up or buy that trade? That's why you have the hard copies. Digging through, you find random stuff that you wouldn't ever think to search for.
Again, if it's not Disney Plus Premier Access, I'm just not going to check it out.
Yeah, it's hard to get the news on there, but I guess if you just pay enough money.
Well, I certainly
Mickey reads the news, right?
I'm getting a lot of news about Jungle Cruise. That's one thing that I'm getting news about.
Cool.
Yeah. Lots of stuff going on with the Rock.
That's Mickey's voice doing it.
Yeah. never mind. All right, let's bring Alex Schumacher, our next guest here, into the stream. He is the creator of Mr. Butter Chips from SLG Publishing, among many, many other things. Alex, welcome to the show. Very excited to have you on.
Yeah, pleasure to be here.
Have you brought a daughter or a mother or some sort of family member to the show? That's kind of like the theme that we have going on today.
Two dogs, so similar to kids, I suppose. So I'm hoping that they're able to keep the learning levels down. But there's no guarantee these two.
I would kill to have these two daughters of mine be dogs for just the next hour.
That's actually next month on Disney Plus Premier Access. They're premiering that movie. My daughters are dogs.
They get some, like, Freaking Friday remake. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's they get a magic medallion, and these dogs look at the daughters, and at the same time, they say, "I wish it were you." And the dogs, of course, say, but the daughters say it, and it works anyway.
Shout out to Kevin in the comments who says the Shaggy Daughters.
Oh, that's much better.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's a good
I just
up.
Gave my daughters an entire bag of pretzels as a bribery, and I failed as a parent currently. So, on with the show.
Yes, I'm on the show. Let's talk about Mr.
We don't need to talk about the book. We have a great movie pitch that we're coming up with.
That's great. This is why we had you on, Alex. Let's talk about Mr. Butter Chips. Mr. Butter Chips has been running for a very long time. It is now collected by SLG. First of all, what is it like taking that long back catalog and then putting it in a collection? What was it like revisiting it?
Oh, I mean, for a cartoonist, I think you are just going through all the pages, seeing everything that you would fix, everything that you would rewrite. But, you know, for the sake of, I guess, transparency or just keeping it real, as they say, you know, it's just left them all as is, didn't fix anything. I mean, I'd love to be able to redraw all of it. But, Dan Votto of SLG seemed to like it enough to put it out. So I have no complaints in that arena.
So Mr. Butter Chips, tell me if I'm making it too basic here, but Cranky Monkey, sort of comments on current events a little bit, or at least state of the world. And he's very cranky about it, but it's very fun. It's very current. You still have it going weekly online, but again, getting back to the collection, because you do have a lot of this very current humor going on with it. Do you feel like, was there any concern there about the jokes traveling at all, or do they still feel as present today as they did a couple of years ago?
Well, I honestly think that was the impetus behind doing the collection, because I knew I wanted the web comic to continue, kind of as, you know, maybe not in perpetuity, but for at least as long as I have it in me to continue creating. And I also, you know, I knew, as, you know, John was mentioning in the last segment, with the administration shift, thank God, we sort of needed to revamp everything, because the previous iteration with Drunk Monkeys magazine was very focused on the Trump administration. That was the main target. So we knew that that we kind of had to retrofit it going forward. So SLG and I had the idea to, you know, change it up a little bit, and it's still kind of, you know, it still comments on some current events, but it's a little bit more subtle, a little bit more satirical. Whereas when it was with Drunk Monkeys, it was quite a bit more in your face and not being very subtle with the messages. So I sort of took a page from Burke Breathed's playbook and was pretty heavily influenced by his Sunday only strip, Outland, which he did after Bloom County. So it's a little more in that vein, where it's this sort of alternate reality, but still has some ties to the real world. So they're still commenting on actual figures and events. But again, it's a lot more hallucinogenic. And as you can see with that image, that's a bit more of how SLG and I are approaching things.
Yeah, that's awesome. What was it like to go sift through all the your old comics, and especially since they are so topical, were you reliving the events that were going on, or at least your feelings toward them?
Yeah, you know, I think in the moment, it was a monthly when it was with Drunk Monkeys. So at the time, it was just a matter of the main focus was trying to narrow it down to the one, you know, item that I, the one issue I wanted to tackle that month, because especially, you know, in the last year, year and a half, oh man, it's so hard to just distill 1 month down into a one page comic. There were so many things at us. And I think, unfortunately, that was sort of the situation from the outset with the Trump administration. There was just so much to focus on. So this gives me a lot more freedom and is a bit more liberating with SLG, where I can have the weekly installments and kind of incorporate several different, you know, issues all at once. If I wanted to, I can, you know, make it a bit more topical. It could be the same week where something happens that I'm commenting on. But again, it's a bit more, you know, hallucinogenic. It's kind of like if a newscaster was on some pretty heavy mushrooms. That's sort of the
dream.
As we kind of showed off a little bit here in the stream, you've also done some more personal / confessional comics. Do you, so I imagine, at least in a certain sense, Mr. Butterchips is a little bit of a stand-in for you. Do you prefer being able to use the drunk smoking monkey as a proxy for your thoughts, or do you prefer putting yourself in the comic, so to speak? Or are they just different experiences?
I mean, they are different experiences, but what I've found is when you use a surrogate like a cartoon monkey, you can say things that you couldn't say necessarily if it was just a you know, surrogate for your own self. Because if it's me in a comic, or a comic version of me, saying the same things that Mr. Butterchips was saying, I think it might be a little more off-putting. But when you have this alcoholic, abrasive monkey, I think the initial reaction, the immediate reaction, is humor. It's funny. And then you can digest what it's actually saying. Whereas when it was the more slice of life, semi-autobiographical content, you couldn't be as straightforward with that, because I think it feels like it's preaching. It's more in a proselytizing kind of fashion, I think, or at least comes off that way when you're doing the semi-autobiographical stuff.
Our third host, who's not here, is sort of our Mr. Butterchips, almost in a one-to-one. The way you just described him, I was like, holy shit. It's like, the reason he's not here is because you're here, because that's too close to home. But he did want to say he's a huge fan. This is a statement he sent to us to read. Mr. Butterchips is badass, and I love it. Such a great strip. You know what you were getting, and it delivers. So you softened the hard heart of our cranky monkey, Pete LePage.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think it's commiseration. You know, it's if it's a mirror for him, then that's great. I think it is for a lot of people. And in a way that I didn't even necessarily intend, but in a wonderful way that people have reached out when they've read specific installations and said, yes, that's how I feel. Or, did you, man, I wish I could be drunk all day. You know?
Did you always intend for it to be topical? I'm curious, hearing you describe it that way, like, how did you sort of get into that and use it as this sort of way of getting those feelings out?
Yeah, it wasn't initially intended to be topical. The initial creation of Mr. Butter Chips was just meant to be an homage to the underground comics of the 60s and 70s. So, you know, Robert Crumb, Gilbert Shelton, who's one of my favorites, does Fabulous Furry Freak Brothers, Spain Rodriguez, who did Trashman, and, you know, on and on and on. So it was just sort of capturing that pastiche a little bit. And I was just filtering it through current times. So this was in April of 2016 when it premiered. So at the time, I was still in a place to just do a fun little comic that was, you know, paying tribute to.
That's so funny.
Initially, it was initially, am I wrong about this? But I believe initially the idea was it was a monkey who loved Hamilton, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then it changed. Yep.
Mr. Yep. Butterchips is all of us.
Always rapping the Hamilton soundtrack. Mm-hmm. So then, you know, November 2016 rolled around and it just took a hard left, just pivoted into being a vessel for the frustration, the aggravation, the anger, the despair that I was feeling. So, you know, it was definitely not initially intended. It's just kind of a product of its time in a lot of ways. And, you know, I was lucky enough to have that kind of outlet to filter a lot of what I was feeling.
Was it always a monkey? Did it start, did it like pop whole cloth out there? Like, yes, this is Mr. Butterchips. This is how he looks. Or how much playing around with the design happened?
No, he was always a monkey. So I grew up in Steinbeck country, Salinas, very close to Monterey. Monterey has a fisherman's wharf where there was an organ grinder and who had a dancing monkey when I was a kid. So just that idea of a, you know, angry, hostile, that monkey specifically dancing for the organ grinder, being hostile towards the audience, was just very humorous in my mind. And I keep saying this, anytime you name a companion animal Mr. Something, it's inherently funny. So off the bat, of humor. So it was always intended to be an organ grinder's monkey.
Now that you have the weekly strip going, I don't know if this is too far afield, but do you have an eye to eventually with SLG doing a second collection of these strips, or is that very far in the future at this point?
I mean, I think it is in the future, but maybe since it's a weekly, it'll be next year. There's my dog.
That dog's out of control. It interrupted the show. You can't have that happen.
You have to hog time. I think the intent is to collect them at some point. So it'll probably be, you know, a year at some point, like next, you know, 2022.
What's the issue of the week for you? What are you ready to take pen to paper on?
This week, I think, the one coming up has already been done. So the one that I'm about to draw is one about him trying to get like antihistamine, basically. Excuse me.
Oh my gosh.
Oh man, he's way more responsible than I am.
Yeah. Also, it's fine. We should probably mention when he gets back that there's always dogs and cats on this podcast.
Yeah, there's no shame there. I mean, I guess try giving the dogs a whole bag of pretzels and. Mm-hmm.
Sorry about that. In the middle of a live feed, no less.
Truly, like this.
He was quiet for the last 3 hours, too. That's the best part.
Yeah. It's just to be clear, this is how we have been living for the past year and a half. There are dogs, there are cats here all the time. It's all good.
It's such a commonality at this point. It just it doesn't even feel like that out of place when a kid or a, you know, dog starts going off in the background.
The funniest thing to me, and this is getting way off topic, but the funniest thing to me is whoever's and it's happening to is like, oh my God, this is literally the most embarrassing thing that's ever happened in the history of the world. And everybody else is like, oh, something new. Show it to me.
And that's kind of a lot of what I filter through my work too. You know, it's those kinds of changing ways that we all interact, and the things that would seem very uncommon or, like you said, like humiliating in the past are just commonplace at this point. So so again, what I was saying while my dog was being an asshole was that Mr. Buttercups was, you know, he goes in and he tries to buy pseudoephedrine. And so the woman who is at the drugstore says, okay, we just need one form of ID. Actually, we need two forms of ID, and we need a, you know, urine test and a blood sample and, you know, all these things. And then it's a 2-week waiting period. And so Mr. Butterchips has to wait 2 weeks while he's feeling miserable, and he goes back to get his pseudoephedrine, and she gives him a complimentary handgun. So it's that kind of idea. Some things are a lot easier to get in this country than, you know, medication or healthcare.
I imagine Mr. Butterchips is taking up quite a lot of time now that it is weekly, but are there other things on the horizon for you? Do you have other confessional or more personal comics or any other projects that you're working on?
Yeah, I have a piece coming out with Fabrice Sapolsky's Mutiny Magazine. So Fabrice was the former senior editor at Humanoids. He's the co-creator of Spider-Man Noir, and he has started his own publishing venture in the last year or so. One of the products of that publishing house is Mutiny Magazine, which is an anthology for marginalized creators, underrepresented voices, et cetera, et cetera. Since we're both Jewish, you know, I got to know him over the last couple of years, and he invited me to pitch something. So what I have coming out, and this is actually the first time I'm talking about it on a podcast, yes, but awesome. A few months back, my wife and I lost a daughter. We lost a pregnancy. So it was something that I didn't know if I wanted to actually write about, that I wanted, you know, didn't know that if it was something I really wanted to put out in the world. I'm a fairly private person for the most part. But it felt like something I needed to do just to process, you know, what was happening. And it's not the story of what happened. It's more of a 5-page reaction piece, essentially.
Oh, wow.
So that's coming out probably in, I think it's the fall, maybe October or November. I did an essay for Monkeys Fighting Robots magazine that just came out, kind of on the impact of being a cartoonist. So I think that's out. I'm not sure if it's available through the Monkeys Fighting Robots site as of yet, but it will be available soon. And then I'm working with my literary agent on a couple different graphic novel ideas. We have a pitch out there that's kind of circulating the traditional publishers, and then there's a new one that I'm working on as well.
I mean, on the personal bent and talking about this new project that you just mentioned, I don't remember when it came out. I think it was a couple of years ago. You did a piece about alcoholism as well. When you do something like that, I guess in your experience, and I'm sure everything is different, but do you find it cathartic when you put it on the page? I mean, putting something out there like that, that is very personal, that has to be hard to do to begin with, but what's the aftermath like? What does it feel after you actually have that out there and people are reading it?
You know, luckily enough, the reaction to the couple of pieces that I've done that were that personal for me so far have been essentially nothing but supportive and, you know, encouraging and, you know, empathetic. So it is harrowing to put out anything that you know, that is that personal, that you feel shame about, you know, because alcoholism is definitely something that can elicit a lot of, you know, feelings that you've done something wrong or you're irresponsible or people are going to judge you. So it's always a little bit of a frightening prospect to put something out like that. But as soon as I do, for me, you know, the way that I am writing and drawing the comics is a way for me to kind of process those and organize those feelings. So it's terrifying, you know, to think about putting them out. But once they're out, there is this community that you find. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be a community of comics readers. It's simply people right. who didn't even realize comics could be about that specific subject, or that comics could be something that, you know, is used for, again, talking about very personal situations or very personal experiences.
I feel like the comics are a unique form, and I think it's just, there's a more personal touch to it as opposed to any other like movie, TV or something like that, or just a straight up book. And I think people connect with it in that way. So to be able to do stuff that really strikes those personal chords and have people see themselves in it, like you were saying, the mirror from before. Like, that's, I think that's like peak comic book work.
Yeah, I think so too. And, you know, it's done in a lot of ways. I mean, I think people infuse their own experiences and their own lives in their work all the time. And sometimes it's a little more obscure. They're somehow weaving it into a sci-fi story or a fantasy story, and it's not as literal. But I think the act of creation, writing comics, movie making, I think it's always, you know, artists, we're always trying to work out something. We're always trying to work through, you know, experiences that we've had and issues that we've had, you know, be it, you know, being a child of a broken home or alcoholism or whatever the case may be. There's always something, I think, that is cathartic about creation, regardless of whether you intended it to be or not. And maybe I'm, you know, speaking out of turn here. Maybe not everybody feels that way, but I know for myself specifically, there's always something that I gain or learn from doing work like that, even when it's about myself. You know, there's still something to learn from that.
I think you said it earlier, like organizing your thoughts and feelings and putting them in a narrative, even if it's like a fictional narrative. I think we process things so much better as people, especially like hard to talk about things when it's a story. And if we can make a story for ourselves about what we're something bad we're feeling or something difficult to talk about, I think it just makes, I know what's happening with me. And people go through, spend so much of their lives not knowing what's happening to them. And I think that's what the value, and comics give you that space between panels and issues to think about what, and you actually process it directly in that way, as opposed to like a movie, it's moving on. You're like, I can't think about what I just saw. With comics, you really can't. And
you're immersed in it, and you can spend the time with it in a way, and not to knock movies, I love movies and TV shows, but like you said, there's something that's more immersive about comics. So if, you know, especially if you're going through a similar phase of your life as the comic that you're reading, I think it can be, you know, incredibly healing to have something like that. Because a lot of those times you feel isolated. You feel like you're the only person who has gone through this specific ordeal. And that's never the case. So the nice thing about putting out stories like that, putting out comics like that, is you're always going to find at least a small group of people to commiserate or again, to empathize or sympathize. You know, that's, I've never put out a comic like that where I haven't had people contact me and not thank me for putting it out there. But, you know, they finally feel like they have somebody that they can talk to about. They finally have somebody they feel like they can connect to because of that, which is, rewarding in and of itself.
Cool. Let's just to plug it one more time, Mr. Butterchips, the collection is out right now, right? People can get it everywhere. Ooh,
boom.
In my own ARC. Get it online, Amazon. Go through IndieBound. Go through IndieBound if you can, would be my recommendation. If you're in San Jose, it is at the SLG shop. So you can always go in the Art Boutique at 44 Ray Street. See you there. But it's available pretty much wherever you can get books online.
Awesome. Alex, thank you so much for coming on the show. Love the book. Perfect. Sorry Pete couldn't be here to plus you up a little bit, but maybe.
And let me just say, he never says, like, tell this person I love their work from a distance. Like, when he's not on the show, he's not thinking about the show. So, like, take that as a
big wet kiss from me.
Oh, definitely. I always am kissing Pete, so it's perfect.
I truly appreciate it. Yeah.
All right. Have a good night, Alex.
All right. Thanks,
later.
Guys.
Great talking to you.
All right. There we go. Once again, that's Alex Schumacher. The name of the book is Mr. Butterchips, which you can check out right now. And we're going to move on to our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up as your audience questions.
Yeah.
And for those, there are two things you got to do. You got to drop some questions over on YouTube in the comments section. I'm going to keep an eye on those. Or you can drop it and ask a question on Crowdcast. But first, it's time to pay a couple of bills. Ready? Here we go. Attention listeners across the galaxy, all the way from Australia to Houston, do we have a pube problem? If so, our friends at Manscaped have cleared you for takeoff with your fourth generation and brand new Lawnmower 4.0. Kick your pubes to the next planet with the Performance Package 4.0. The orbits in your pants
Like, keep you're talking, Alex. Yeah. Don't let my 3-year-old daughter make this weird for you.
Oh, is this why Pete didn't want to be on the show today? We'll feel like you're in zero gravity when you use the best tools for the job for the leaders in male grooming. Join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped to get your rocket ready for takeoff by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20. Justin, do you want to take a turn here, or should I keep going?
No, sorry. I'm just trying to explain what my rocket ready for takeoff is to my daughter. Is that okay?
Yeah,
I just
that's
need a
cool.
second to me.
Inside this package, you'll find their lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, weed whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, crop preserver, ball deodorant. Do you want to explain to her what that is?
She knows about ball deodorant.
Okay. Crop reviver, toner, performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag to hold your whole solar system. First scheduled for liftoff. Yeah. New lawnmower 4.0 trimmer. This spaceship is here to guide you on a journey to trim your body, balls, butt, and even Uranus. The fourth generation trimmer also features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents. Thanks to the advanced skin safe technology, the lawnmower 4.0 has a 7,000 RPM motor. A new multifunction on off switch can engage a travel lock and is even waterproof. The Lawnmower 4.0 also has a 4000K LED spotlight. You can turn on and off when needed for a more precise shave throughout your travels across the universe. The Performance Package 4.0 also includes the Weed Whacker. It's like having a little astronaut to chop your worst weeds up top in your nose and ear.
I got you. Little astronaut. I call my daughter a little astronaut, so she knows
what she does. Oh, nice. You want to take this last part?
Yes, I do. God, Alex, great reading. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. For a clean Trinity and beyond, your space balls will thank you.
Trinity? What does that mean?
Don't know. Huh. I guess I don't know.
All right. Well, there we go. Manscaped, check that out. We're going to move on with your audience questions. And now I'm here solo. I'll tell you what, guys.
No, I'm here.
Oh, you're back. You're back. Okay.
I'm back, baby.
I'll tell you what. I wasn't sure if you were going to be here as well. So I kind of prepped the show as if I was going solo. And in my head, I was kind of like, okay, there we go. But we're good to go. We got a couple of questions here over on Crowdcast. This is an interesting one from Stray Bullet. What would you do if you came home and your house is occupied by Nazis or Trump supporters? I don't know. In general, I think if I came home and there was somebody in my house who wasn't there, I would panic.
Yeah, I mean, that's
regardless.
A natural reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah. But occupied, like not sure. Just someone in there, like truly like I live here now. I mean, you got to take that home back.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
No, I'd have a little bit of an action sequence. What if your home was occupied by small children who, for some reason, don't want to hear a Balls commercial?
I lost. Don't worry. I'm going to play that back and just really walk through it. That's sort of a bedtime story for us.
Oh, okay.
My life has been occupied by children for quite some time.
Yes.
So, sounds like you need
to go. Here's a question maybe you can answer. Your kids could actually answer. This is from Kevin. Favorite monkeys? No apes.
Ooh, that's tricky. Favorite monkey, no apes. Let's see.
Are we going to go with comic book monkeys again, or are we talking real monkeys? Real monkeys.
I think...
Here, hold on. I'm going to look at Bronx Zoo monkeys because there's a type of like very small, fluffy monkeys. Which are very cute.
Oh, we're talking like species of monkey.
Species of monkeys. Well, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The ones, here we go, Jungle World. They don't really have a list of the types of monkeys they have here, which is very unfortunate. But maybe the white-cheeked gibbon, I would say.
Ooh.
Good monkey.
I like those ones that live in snow, the snow monkeys.
Oh, yeah.
The Arctic monkeys.
Yeah, this isn't quite related, but can I tell you my daughter's first joke?
Yes.
Okay, so
monkey
my daughter's
no,
it's not monkey based, but the snow reminded me. So we were at the Central Park Zoo, and I was wheeling around to the stroller. She was about 2, 2 and a half, something like that, and I was exhausted. And I said, "Hey, do you want to go see snow leopards?" And she said, "I want to go see yes leopards."
Oh,
yeah, I was like, "Oh boy, Got a comedian on our hands here.
That's not just a prepared joke. That's a in-the-moment riff.
It was great. I loved it. I finally felt like this was my child. I was very happy.
Yes. She's just giving back to you the type of comedy that you give to her.
Exactly.
It's beautiful.
Do you have a favorite comic book monkey while we're on the topic?
That's
other good. Than Mr. Butterchips, of course.
Obviously, Mr. Butterchips. I mean, Detective Chimp, sure. While a chimpanzee, is right there for me.
And also not the same thing, but Gorilla Man, pretty good. Sorry, Kevin, we're going with apes and other types of monkeys. We have a limited sphere of knowledge. I apologize.
Yeah, why are you down on apes?
Yeah.
But the apes.
Apes are great.
You're scared by the documentary Planet of the Apes. I get yeah. it.
Here, wait. I'll come up with Pete's answer. He'll sit here quietly for a minute and be like, I don't know, Grape Ape?
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, something like that.
Is Grape Ape an ape?
No, he's actually a monkey, kind of surprisingly. It's a little bit of a twist. This is from Nelson Martinez for you. Being a fellow Top Chef fan, Justin, I just wrapped up newest season. Would you recommend any other cooking competition shows or any competition shows in general you guys like?
Wow, great question. I mostly just watch Top Chef for my my cooking competition, though I now am going through all of Bourdain's shows to get another look at those. I feel like I've missed some episodes. And I'm also, I worked on a pilot for a travel show, and if that gets picked up, it's going to be consume a lot of my mental space. So I'm trying to get all into that headspace.
Top Chef was the main one I watched, and the reason that I like that one, I've seen plenty of others, but the main reason I liked it is because they're actually skilled. Like, they're actually know what they're doing, and they care about the cooking, and it's not about people screwing up or anything like that. I watched a couple of episodes of Crime Scene Kitchen on Fox, and they're skilled too, but it's like, it's the same format as everything else. It feels like watching the same show eventually. Oh my God. What's the Food Network one that where they get a random basket of stuff? Giada.
Competition is Giada versus herself. Yeah, in a lot of ways. You're talking about Iron Chef?
Chopped. Yes, there we go. Yeah. Early seasons of Chopped were great. They were a lot of fun.
It's that one is so formatted that it's just less fun for me. And the people, they don't let you know anything about them except like, I live in Tucson. Yes. And then they're like, I blew this grilled cheese challenge. let me shout out, though, Fuck That's Delicious as one of my, not a competition, but just a great, fun cooking show.
The other one that I watched a bunch of the early seasons of that I thought was really good was Great American Food Truck Road Race or whatever it was.
Yeah,
I don't know the actual name, but the first couple of seasons of that were legitimately really good, particularly because it got into the business of food trucks and it was all about that as well as the cooking. There was also some elimination stuff and like some typical reality show competition twist stuff. But when it concentrated on them actually just driving around and literally just trying to find a parking spot somewhere, it was actually really fascinating and interesting.
Yeah, I love this. Those shows do so well when they have detours or just weird stuff that happens. I guess we should probably let our official chef, Brett Macris, have his answer read. He says, watch Chef's Table on Netflix, which Chef Table is great. A great show.
Absolutely. We got one last one here. This is from Josh. If the three hosts competed in a cook-off, who would win? I guess it depends on
me.
You?
100%.
Really?
I mean, I've never seen you cook. I'm curious because I know you cook.
I cook all the time.
Me too. My wife doesn't really cook.
Yeah.
So like we should go head to head.
All right. There you go. Who's judging it, though, I guess is the question, because if it's Pete probably wins.
No, we can't have Pete's palate be the judge. He wants a garbage plate. His desire is a garbage. Okay, Brett says he'll judge it, so we'll just mail him a dish.
Absolutely. I'm going to put it loose in a box. That's okay, right?
Me too. Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to put it just in a knapsack on the back of a horse and slap its ass and just say, go to Nolan's, horse.
Absolutely.
What would we cook? What would be our cook-off?
God, I'm trying to think. Like, well, what's your go-to dish?
I'm all over the place. I'm always challenging. I love cooking it all. I've been getting into sort of some curries lately, mm-hmm. Trying to do more just like making those up as I go.
I'll tell you, I mean, getting back to competition stuff, the one go-to that I had for a really long time was these tri-tip tacos from Artie, who Ooh. Won the first Next Food Network star thing. They were so yeah. good, and I used to make them. I haven't made them in a really long time, but I love those.
Tri-tip, sort of more mysterious cut. People don't yeah. cook with tri-tip very much. I love tri-tip.
Great
stuff. I did a coffee rub on the grill with the tri-tip that was so good.
Josh says garbage plates. I think if we made three garbage plates, that's a good idea. I like it.
Let's do it. Next time we are in person, if that happens, we should do. We'll each do a garbage. You and I should do a garbage plate, and then Pete will eat it. I don't want Pete to cook a garbage plate. Yeah, it's too.
Pete
too
can
close
buy a garbage plate.
Yeah. No, I'm going to charge him for it.
Yeah.
I think we know the rule. It just has to be a see-through plate by the end of it.
We do have one last one here, actually, from YouTube. Richard Espinoza says, what fanfare theme still gives you the chills when you hear it, i.e. X-Men, Star Wars, etc.?
The theme song that gives me chills.
Yeah. I think it depends on the circumstance, but Star Wars does get me sometimes. Like, if it's a... I can think of various times over the years, from first time I watched it with my kids to going to see it in concert with John Williams conducting, where it's just those special moments where it's like, oh, okay. Oh, this is good. I like this a lot.
Go ahead. I was going to say Superman, the Superman movie theme. Like, I feel like that is one that just stands the test of time. And even though I don't rewatch those movies, they are not like my favorite movies by any means. But just the music of that stands out so, mm-hmm. so intensely.
This isn't exactly, I don't think they use this theme anymore, but the Doctor Who theme that Murray Gold came up with, they would just deploy it at exactly the right time on the show. And it's something that would like, they get the Doctor coming out, giving a big speech, like a really good speech, and they start playing the theme. It just makes you cheer and it's great. And the other one, this is just top of mind because I've been watching some episodes, but old school Star Trek theme when that kicks in, or like a good riff on it.
Yeah.
That gets me too.
Especially that one stands alone. Like, not a lot of themes are like that anymore. Just that weird sound choice.
Yeah. Kevin says Gold redid the theme several times. Which would be your fave? Probably Matt Smith. That was my doctor. That was the one that I loved, and that's the one that really got me.
That was your doctor. You went to Matt Smith for your...
he treated me I don't want to get too personal about it, but...
Yeah. No, you should get... I mean, you just said... You talked about... you told my daughter that you need to get your rocket ready, so I think we're sort of beyond the pale when it comes to being personal.
Okay, fine. Alex. Matt Smith treated me for time sickness.
Cool.
So that's a Doctor Who thing or something. I don't
know. It's over my head. I don't watch it. Wow. Okay. Don't turn. I know you have a cold, so don't turn on your.
I'm hepped up on cold medicine right now. But
so we didn't do what you're drinking, and clearly you're drinking some sort of deadly combination of DayQuil and NyQuil.
Yes.
And me, I'm drinking a little bit of Miller High Life here.
Ooh. Nice.
And I'm drinking in my cherubic voices of my children.
All right. Well, why don't I give you a break here? We're going to move to our next section, which is trivia. And for trivia, we're going to turn it over to me today. I'm going to take care of trivia. But we actually have a contestant here on the show. So just give me a second to invite him over into the stream. Now, if you're interested in playing trivia, we got a link for that. Michael Bramwell is going to join us today to do the trivia, but I will drop the link here in the YouTube and also in the Crowdcast chat if you want to sign up for it. We're definitely looking for people for August and beyond. Michael, hello.
How's it going?
Can you see me? Everything working all right?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
All right. You ready to do some trivia? You ready to win a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics?
Well, I'm more than ready.
All right. Cool. Here we go. So today, today's trivia is all about tropical comic book news with a tip of a hat to the legend Pete LePage, who sadly is no longer with us. Well, I guess he's just not here tonight, but, you know, regardless. Here we
go. Same difference.
Same difference. Okay, here we go. Once again, tropical comic book news. In the new, number one, in the new movie, The Suicide Squad, to which tropical location does Waller send the team? A, Corto Maltese, B, Santa Prisca, or C, Stephen Conroy? Is it A, Corto Maltese, B, Santa Prisca, or C, Stephen Conroy?
I'm getting a bit of an A impression here.
Yes, that's correct.
That is correct.
A, I know the movie hasn't come out yet, but in fact, the Suicide Squad is sent to Corto Maltese, famous DC Comics location by Amanda Waller. Here we go. Question number two.
Real quick, Alex. Yes. You're proving that it actually is hard to give clues because it looked hard for you to give that clue there. You paused and were like,
Just, I'm trying to pay tribute to Pete and his being the star of trivia. I can only hope to someday rise to those heights.
Shouts to Luana's mom.
In Captain America number one, this is question number two. In Captain America number 117 from 1969, Cap was trapped in the Red Skull's body and on the tropical Exile Island. But he actually got help from which new hero? A, James Rhodes, a.k.a. War Machine, B, Sam Wilson, a.k.a. The Falcon, or C, J. Stephen Brantley, a.k.a. Michael Myers? Which one do you think it is? Is it War Machine, The Falcon, or Michael Myers?
Thinking War Machine.
Are you thinking... Are you thinking more?
I might be thinking different.
Yeah,
I might be thinking the Falcon.
Oh, is that your final answer?
I'm going with that. Yeah.
Yes, that's correct. It's B. It's the Falcon. Good job. All right. Last question here in our tropical comic book news. Three, in the Punisher War Journal number 17 titled "Tropical Trouble," Frank heads to Florida while Microtrip goes to Hawaii. The issue was written by Carl Potts and penciled by whom? A, Jim Lee, B, Rob Liefeld, C, Melody Bates. Is it A, Jim Lee, B, Rob Liefeld, or C, Melody Bates?
Jim Lee?
It's Jim Lee!
Nice.
You're correct. Back in a very long time ago, I didn't even write down the date, Jim Lee was penciling a random issue of Punisher War Journal. There you go. You
have everyone knows.
Yes. You have won a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics. We'll get that off to you right away. Thank you so much for coming on, Michael. Have a good night.
I appreciate it. We'll see you.
All right.
Later. Pete remains the star of trivia.
Pete is the star of trivia. And of course, all of the third answers here were a hint towards a secret movie. Very curious if Kevin guessed it. No? It's a movie called Occupy Elm Street that starred Pete as Ghostface.
What?
There
well,
you go.
That's a Google. That's something to check out, perhaps, after the show ends.
There you go. Occupy Elm Street. Check it out. It is on IMDb. That's correct, Kevin. There you go. All right, as we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day, unless you're DC Comics, in which case today is New Comic Book Day. But Justin, what are you looking forward to? What are you excited about?
I mean, I got to give it up to Seven to Eternity. The final issue of this great book by Rick Remender with art by Jerome Pena. Like, truly beautifully drawn book. Classic Remender dread and stress, but just a great story, really well told. Epic fantasy adventure, and I'm very excited to see how it's going to come to a close.
I'm excited about the Me You Love in the Dark number one from Image Comics, written by Scotty Young, art by Jorge Corona. This is the team from Middle West, and that was sort of a darker but still all ages story. This is them skewing even more adult and doing some sort of creepy ghost love story, which is very cool. So excited to check that out. And both of those titles are going to be in our Stack podcast, which comes out tomorrow on the Comic Book Club feed and also its own dedicated Stack feed at 9 a.m. And folks, that is it for tonight's show.
That's the show, folks.
We want to thank John Luzer for being on the show, Alex Schumacher for being on the show. From John, check out Marguerite versus the Occupation. From Alex, Mr. Butterchips. Next week, we're going to have a packed show for you. Sal Crivelli is going to be here from Comic Pop back on the show. Yeah. Also, Nandor Fox Schaefer from Manchild. Kyle Higgins from Ordinary Gods is going to be here. So lots of folks. Also, stuff to check out from us, Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, is trucking along. We have bonus episodes counting down phase two, right up until What If starts next week, so that should be a lot of fun. We're going to have a new episode this Friday with a special guest that you'll definitely want to check out. Yes. Also, Riverdale After Dark, our Riverdale podcast, is not quite back, but coming back very soon, as is Star Guys, our Stargirl podcast, is also coming back. Both of those next week, so it's going to be a packed week of podcasts, particularly on Tuesday and Wednesday.
Things are ramping up for Old Comic Book Club.
Sure are.
It's fun.
And if you want to support all that, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast and many more, until next time, good night.
Good night, guys. See you later.
See you later, your daughters, your moms.
I've got some explaining to do to my kids.